The Shadow and the Flash by Jack London. Published by Macmillan Education, a division of Macmillan Publishers Limited. Copyright Macmillan Publishers Limited, 2011. Part 5. While he talked, he began to strip, and when he stood naked before me, he thrust a pot and brush into my hand and said, "Here! Give me a coat of this." It was an oily, shellac-like stuff, which spread quickly and easily over the skin and dried immediately. "Merely preliminary and precautionary," he explained, when I'd finished. "But now, for the real stuff." I picked up another pot he indicated and glanced inside, but could see nothing. "It's empty," I said. "Stick your finger in it." I obeyed, and was aware of a sensation of cool moistness. On withdrawing my hand, I glanced at the forefinger, the one I had immersed, but it had disappeared. I moved, and knew from the alternate tension and relaxation of the muscles that I moved it, but it defied my sense of sight. To all appearances, I had been shorn of a finger. Nor could I get any visual impression of it till I extended it under the skylight and saw its shadow plainly blotted on the floor. Lloyd chuckled. "Now spread it on and keep your eyes open." I dipped the brush into the seemingly empty pot and gave him a long stroke across his chest. With the passage of the brush, the living flesh disappeared from beneath. I covered his right leg, and he was a one-legged man, defying all laws of gravitation. And so, stroke by stroke, member by member, I painted Lloyd Inwood into nothingness. It was a creepy experience, and I was glad when naught remained in sight but his burning black eyes, poised, apparently unsupported, in midair. "I have a refined and harmless solution for them," he said. "A fine spray with an airbrush, and presto, I am not." This deftly accomplished, he said, "Now I shall move about, and do you tell me what sensations you experience." "In the first place, I cannot see you," I said, and I could hear his gleeful laugh from the midst of the emptiness. "Of course," I continued, "you cannot escape your shadow, but that was to be expected. When you pass between my eye and an object, the object disappears. But so unusual and incomprehensible is its disappearance that it seems to me as though my eyes had blurred. When you move rapidly, I experience a bewildering succession of blurs. The blurring sensation makes my eyes ache and my brain tired." "Have you any other warnings of my presence?" he asked. "No and yes," I answered. "When you are near me, I have feelings similar to those produced by dank warehouses, gloomy crypts, and deep mines. And as sailors feel the loom of the land on dark nights, so I think I feel the loom of your body. But it is all very vague and intangible." Long we talked that last morning in his laboratory, and when I turned to go, he put his unseen hand in mine with nervous grip and said, "Now I shall conquer the world." And I could not dare to tell him of Paul Tichlorne's equal success. At home, I found a note from Paul asking me to come up immediately, and it was high noon when I came spinning up the driveway on my wheel. Paul called me from the tennis court, and I dismounted and went over. But the court was empty. As I stood there, gaping open-mouthed, a tennis ball struck me on the arm, and as I turned about, another whizzed past my ear. For aught I could see of my assailant, they came whirling at me from out of space, and right well was I peppered with them. But when the balls already flung at me began to come back for a second whack, I realized the situation. Seizing a racket and keeping my eyes open, I quickly saw a rainbow flash appearing and disappearing and darting over the ground. I took out after it, and when I laid the racket upon it for a half dozen stout blows, Paul's voice rang out. "Enough! Enough! Oh, ouch! Stop! You're landing on my naked skin, you know! Ow! Ow! I'll be good! I'll be good!" "I only wanted you to see my metamorphosis," he said ruefully, and I imagined he was rubbing his hurts. A few minutes later, we were playing tennis, a handicap on my part, for I could have no knowledge of his position, save when all the angles between himself, the sun, and me were in proper conjunction. Then he flashed, and only then. But the flashes were more brilliant than the rainbow, purest blue, most delicate violet, brightest yellow, and all the intermediary shades, with the scintillant brilliancy of the diamond, dazzling, blinding, iridescent. But in the midst of our play, I felt a sudden cold chill, reminding me of deep mines and gloomy crypts, such a chill as I had experienced that very morning. The next moment, close to the net, I saw a ball rebound in midair and empty space, and at the same instant, a score of feet away, Paul Tichlorne emitted a rainbow flash. It could not be he from whom the ball had rebounded, and with sickening dread, I realized that Lloyd Inwood had come upon the scene. To make sure, I looked for his shadow, and there it was, a shapeless blotch the girth of his body, the sun was overhead, moving along the ground. I remembered his threat, and felt sure that all the long years of rivalry were about to culminate in uncanny battle. I cried a warning to Paul, and heard a snarl as of a wild beast, and an answering snarl. I saw the dark blotch move swiftly across the court, and a brilliant burst of vari-colored light moving with equal swiftness to meet it. And then shadow and flash came together, and there was the sound of unseen blows. The net went down before my frightened eyes. I sprang toward the fighters, crying, "For God's sake!" But their locked bodies smote against my knees, and I was overthrown. "You keep out of this, old man!" I heard the voice of Lloyd Inwood from out of the emptiness. And then Paul's voice crying, "Yes, we've had enough of peacemaking!" From the sound of their voices, I knew they had separated. I could not locate Paul, and so approached the shadow that represented Lloyd. But from the other side came a stunning blow on the point of my jaw, and I heard Paul scream angrily, "Now will you keep away?" Then they came together again. The impact of their blows, their groans and gasps, and the swift flashings and shadow movings telling plainly of the deadliness of the struggle. I shouted for help, and Gaffer Bedshaw came running into the court. I could see, as he approached, that he was looking at me strangely, but he collided with the combatants and was hurled headlong to the ground. With despairing shriek and a cry of, "Oh, Lord, I got him!" he sprang to his feet and tore madly out of the court. I could do nothing, so I sat up, fascinated and powerless, and watched the struggle. The noonday sun beat down with dazzling brightness on the naked tennis court, and it was naked. All I could see was the blotch of shadow and the rainbow flashes, the dust rising from the invisible feet, the earth tearing up from beneath the straining foot grips, and the wire screen bulge once or twice as their bodies hurled against it. That was all, and after a time even that ceased. There were no more flashes, and the shadow had become long and stationary. And I remembered their set boyish faces when they clung to the roots in the deep coolness of the pool. They found me an hour afterward. Some inkling of what had happened got to the servants, and they quitted the Tichlorne service in a body. Gaffer Bedshaw never recovered from the second shock he received, and is confined in a madhouse, hopelessly incurable. The secrets of their marvelous discoveries died with Paul and Lloyd, both laboratories being destroyed by grief-stricken relatives. As for myself, I no longer care for chemical research, and science is a tabooed topic in my household. I've returned to my roses. Nature's colors are good enough for me.